In our group, we were just talking about how people from Minnesota, northern U.S. and Canada, we like, we pronounce all of our vowels. hello, everyone. I'll say hi, starting with Tyler and Peter, Bob, Susan, Jim, and FYI, if you want to, you know, go off of spotlighted or speaker view, you can just go back to gallery view, go back and forth. Paulette, Jeff, Jinryu, Marv, Karen. I mean, Karen with an A. There was a Karen with an E. Okay, Karen with an A, and Mick, and Karen with an E. And Karen, where are you joining us from?
I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, cool. Yes. Another East Coaster. Yeah. Alice, Aaron, Joan, John, Linda R, Katie, Tessa, and Sabrina. All right, welcome. We've got all kinds of stuff going on. Some of us are madly preparing for the Jukai ceremony this Sunday, which will be when we usually would have Dharma talk. We will have that ceremony, and there will be a small, so in our Zendo, it'll be the first public thing we have done in our Zendo a long time, but it's not yet, we can't accommodate everybody who would like to come at this point. We're not prepared for that, so we're keeping it limited to kind of invite only. So it's the preceptees who will be here, and a couple of their guests, and then those of us who are staffing it. So just, we'd love to have you show up, but wait till August. It looks like if everything stays on our trajectory, that we will move to a hybrid form of practice starting in the beginning of August. And that means that there will be, for fully vaccinated folks, you can kind of get on a approved list, if you will, and just come to the Zendo. But then we will be setting up multiple computers and a monitor and microphones and all that kind of stuff. So this Sunday will be a little bit of we'll be kind of winging it. We'll have two laptops and a couple microphones and stuff. So it might end up being a little weird. You might not be able to hear this or hear that. I don't know. But for the most part, you'll be able to witness. So that would be really great if you can come and witness the seven people who will be receiving the precepts and formally becoming Buddhists on Sunday. So please join that. And I will be going on sabbatical for the month of July. And so I am lining up people to lead discussions and give talks and stuff like that. So we're pretty close to having that all scheduled up, but also we are going to need some help with just Zoom hosts. And, you know, I think, you know, Jim schedules our guest masters and doans and what have you, but definitely need to have a full schedule of those too. So if you are interested, especially actually if you are just, you know, you live at a distance and you're by Zoom, this is your opportunity to volunteer and do stuff. So you can help out hosting our Zoom meetings, and that will continue, right? Well, once we do a hybrid thing, we're also going to need people paying attention to what's happening on Zoom. So, August retreat, which will be, again, it'll be, you know, like for vaccinated folks, you have the option of in person, but we'll also do it online. This week's newsletter should have a feature about the book that I mentioned, Book of Householder Koans. And a couple people, I think, are going to do their Tuesday, in July, they're going to do their Tuesday class on it. And I figure I will be leading next Tuesday's class, the last Tuesday in June, and I will pick a chapter from that book. And hopefully, I don't know, hopefully I'll pick it soon enough that you can get notified of it. But if not, it won't matter and we can just wing it. Might be worth picking up that book. And I think I'll probably continue with it for a while in August as well, when I start leading the Tuesday classes again. Mick?
Can I ask a question about, do you have that book? Like, I guess what I'm asking is, are the koans so long that you wouldn't read them in the Zoom meeting? You know what I'm saying? Because if it's like a koan, it's, you know, maybe 15 lines and you could read the whole thing in 2 minutes and you would read it in its entirety.
Well, I mean, you know, it depends on what you mean, but the koan itself is a few verses.
Okay.
Of course you can read
so that.
But then there's the commentary, and frankly the commentary is what kind of unpacks it and makes it really interesting. So I think that's worth reading ahead, but I don't know. I mean, it'd probably get kind of boring to read something out loud at length on Zoom. So I don't know. But I don't know. I don't know how the book group works. I guess you read stuff out loud of the book group, so I can wing it. Any questions or anything else that I should announce? Okay. Let's see. So tonight, Jim will be taking us through the last precept. Bye, Tyler.
All right. Thank you. So for this particular precept that's opening, actually, is quite apt. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So the tenth precept, respecting the Buddha, unfolding the Dharma, nourishing the Sangha. This particular precept takes us right back to where we started with the three refuges, although there's sort of a twist in my mind to it. When we start out taking refuge, the three treasures are taking care of us and in the form of being refuges for us. But in this precept, it's now we are the ones that are caring for it. We are respecting the Buddha, unfolding the Dharma, and nourishing the Sangha, and each of which is a form of care for that particular treasure. One of the things I guess I realized about the three treasures is that there's sort of a grace. You don't have to earn them. You don't have to strive for them. They're simply available to us. And they're there for us to pick them up when we're ready for them. So one of the things that as I looked at this, it was like, okay, this particular precept just sort of sits there and intertwines into everything else. One worldview that I guess I've heard at one point is that every other person that I encounter is a fully enlightened Buddha, and their faults, such as I would say, are simply a skillful means for me to see my own shortcomings. And when I take that particular worldview and I just sort of map it onto this precept, one, for me, I would start out by respecting that particular Buddha so that I can learn from them. If I don't respect that, then I'm not going to be able to see anything and learn from it. And as I look at it, I'll identify and I'll say, there's kind of a sharp edge there. That bothers me. And that's the fault that the thing that I'm thinking of as a fault. When I take that particular dispute that I've created, then if I look more closely at it, then I sort of turn around and I find a rough spot on me. And at that point, then the second part of this precept comes into play for me. And essentially by unfolding the Dharma and looking at the teachings that I've had, I can learn about myself and I can learn about myself in particular, but I can also learn about others in that. So that's the second step of it. And finally, there's the last step of that is to, when I take what I've learned and I use that to, change my view of the world and share that with the Sangha, that allows me to work on my shortcomings. So that's just sort of one case where I've taken this particular precept and just apply it. And I kind of found that there were a lot of ways to do that. And I've sort of gone through and kind of taken the pieces of it and tried to illustrate how I see it applying in places. So anyhow, like all the other precepts, as you probably noticed as we went through them, this one ends up enfolding all the others. And it's perhaps even a little less subtle than the others are. As we sort of unfold the Dharma, we see the ways in which we're missing the mark respecting the Buddha. And as we unfold the Dharma, we nourish the Sangha by seeing the ways in which we do respect the Buddha. And we also nourish ourselves as part of the Sangha. And unfolding the Dharma can be noticing when we're failing to express the Dharma with someone else, or when we're unskillful in our words, or when in our actions, or even in our thoughts. So that's the unfolding can help us to see where we're being unskillful in interacting with the Sangha. And then kind of the next thing I did was I sort of went back and tried reflecting this particular precept against the others. And needless to say, there were a lot of places where it does, because this precept kind of has at its core these three treasures which are central. And they just sort of keep popping up in places. So from the starting from the beginning, cultivating an encouraging life. And we respect the Buddha as it appears in our life. And we uncover parts of the Dharma that help us to live more skillfully. And we cultivate our relationships with other Sangha members, and we encourage them. We encourage them, they encourage us. There's encouragement back and forth. Honoring the gift not yet given. We allow the items that are currently with other people to remain with them until other people are ready to part with them. By maintaining that distance, we avoid creating disharmony, which can hurt the Sangha. Remaining faithful in relationships. We're mindful of our promises to others, and we strive to keep them. This allows others we interact with to count on our good intentions and to keeping our word. And this helps to nurture the bonds within the Sangha. Communicating truth. We avoid causing harm within and without the Sangha by misleading others with illusory words. So once again, the Sangha, nurturing the Sangha, shows up in there. Polishing clarity, dispelling delusion. By clearly seeing ourselves and skillfully communicating what we're seeing in ourselves and maybe in others, we nourish the growth of the Sangha and ourselves. Creating wisdom from ignorance. We respect the Buddha when we realize we've made a mistake and we figure out how to skillfully respond and learn from the situation. We unfold the Dharma when we use what's been passed down to us to figure out a new way to respond to that situation. And we nourish the Sangha by improving ourselves and helping others to improve themselves. The next precept, maintaining modesty, extolling others. If we concentrate on allowing others within the Sangha to shine, they in turn will encourage us to shine. And so, sharing understanding, freely giving self. So we unfold the Dharma and we learn things. Sometimes they're personal, and sometimes they're more general. When we skillfully share those with others, we learn. That helps others to learn. Dwelling in equanimity. In gracefully recovering from being angry, we avoid inflicting additional harm on the Sangha. And then we also help demonstrate skillful actions that others can help build more resilient Sangha when problems do arise. And then we're back to this precept itself. So one of the things that I kind of noticed with when I was looking at this is even this particular precept has got intertwined inside itself. I kind of looked at it and thought, respecting the respecting the Buddha, is if, you know, is taking an action. And so we do something. And unfolding the Dharma is stepping back or stepping away from this particular action and evaluating. What did I do? What happened? What were the results? Nourishing the Sangha is encouraging ourselves and others to become more skillful based on what we learned. So that was, you know, that was kind of yet another view on things. That particular set of things kind of reminded me of Tara Branch's RAIN principle, which was recognize, allow, investigate, and nurture. So anyhow, I thought that at this point, we're sort of at the end of months of study of these precepts. And I was thinking we might kind of break out and go into breakout rooms for a little while and talk about which of the precepts seemed easier or harder for us to work on. And so
Did you want me to form them, Jim?
Yeah.
Let's do 4 or 5 participants per room. And you get to pick your own room. How you feeling? Oh my God, that sounds terrible. Oh, you're muted.
Because we're recording, I'll talk later.
Talk to you later. All right, where are you going?
Welcome back. I guess one of the things I guess I could say at this point is I guess if people wanna had insights from their rooms, we could go around and do that. I think probably just unmute yourself because I'm not sure how to figure out who's put their hand up. Well, actually,
I can take care of that. If people raise their hand electronically, I can call on them for you. Peter.
I'm only going to share because I had started to share for the first time in the final seconds of our breakout. And really what I got was that surprises are not rare. And so I'm just, what I got from listening to the others is that we're really not very good self-monitors and we should just prepare to be surprised and sort of meditate ahead of time how we want to respond when we are being surprised yet again.
One of the things that we, well, that I talked about in our group was sort of the way that the idea of yourself is, it's so tempting to buy into it as like a fixed thing that you can tinker with and get better at and all this other stuff. And I think a lot of the precepts are sort of like, you know, pushing us to let go of that. And what I found is that it's extremely difficult because you kind of focus your attention on being able to let go of one, and then you find out you've just gripped a little bit tighter on the other side of it. And, you know, it's like a bit like playing whack-a-mole, you know, like you can get a couple, but then you've got others popping up over the place. And, you know, I've really enjoyed the precept study because it kind of helps you get a lay of the land. But yeah, practically kind of figuring out how to manage it is always really tricky, I think.
Okay. Well, all right. Thank you. In the book Being Upright, Rebbe Anderson observed that all the precepts are a single principle, which is study the self. And so I kind of did my little mapping thing again and realized that, okay, so study the self, respecting the Buddha. So before we can really study the self, we have to respect it. And as something that's worthy of study, because otherwise it's very hard to put a lot of effort into studying something that you don't think is worthwhile. So, you know, there's our first principle. And for unfolding the Dharma, there were two parts of it, which is we can see parts of the Dharma without unfolding it. It's the obvious parts that sort of, you know, that are there. But we need to unfold it because there's parts that are hidden inside. And so that's the unfolding the Dharma. And as we unfold the Dharma, we can see those parts, and the parts that we find in there, those can be useful for looking at ourself and comparing and contrasting and learning from that. And there's another viewpoint there which plays on one of the other Sanskrit meanings for Dharma is as an object. And in that, you know, if you regard the self as an object and unfold, and that you unfold, or Dharma that you unfold, then the self is something that you're unfolding, you're looking inside of and seeing what you can learn. And then the third aspect of that, the third aspect of the precept is nourishing the Sangha. And sometimes by looking at other people can help us to understand ourselves. We can look at someone else and say, oh, they do that, and maybe I do the same thing. Or they responded in this way. So by looking at others, we can help, you know, that can help us to see ourselves. The challenge, of course, is that I've heard it said that when we're pointing out the faults of others, that we've got three fingers that are pointing back at us. So we have to be humble in our, finding faults in others, that we, as we look at them, remember that there's a reason why we're able to recognize that fault, those faults. So So, all right. And then I guess the sort of a tail end piece that I've got here is for, it's kind of a personal view on things. For me, it took me a long time to see all three of the treasures in my life, at least in terms of taking refuge. When I sort of first came to Zen, I was looking for a path to provide a little more order into my life. And the Buddha kind of appeared as the source of what seemed to be wise approaches to things, or wise approaches to life in the world. And that helped me figure out how to become more skillful in coping with my life. And over time, as I was sort of looking inside those teachings, and I found written versions of them, and usually the unfolding the Dharma usually has a written quality to it. And so that part sort of came naturally to me. But for Sangha, actually took, in terms of taking refuge, it took much longer for me. And the point where I really realized it, it kind of happened in a subtle, in a way that I didn't know, that I wasn't really aware of it happening. But I know that when my father passed away suddenly, I sort of found myself feeling completely untethered. And it was like, I wasn't sure what to do next. But I had been practicing long enough, sort of like, okay, making an offering and sitting seemed like the right next step. And so I ended up going out to Great Vow, and Sangha was very welcoming. And it sort of gave me a place to be for a few hours, and while I kind of sorted out what was happening next. But that was the first time I really, realized, oh, I've taken refuge in Sangha. And that was, that for me was sort of the third, the realization that I had, that third treasure was more visible to me. So I had couple more questions for people. So, which was, which of the treasures resonates most for you, and has it changed over time? And the counter question to that one is, which one of the treasures isn't resonating for you, and what does that tell you? And I figure we'll just, rather than doing breakout rooms, we can just sort of people chime in, or if they have questions or comments, I will open things up.
Well, things have changed for me a lot over the years, but when I first got into Zen, I was reading and I meditated, and I was like, okay, I get the Buddha, he was a wise teacher, and it's also kind of our nature that recognizes truth can, move toward a better way. And the Dharma's, teachings and useful practices, and, you get those from a book, right? Then I was like, Sangha? What do I need a Sangha for? I mean, I was like, only a year before I got involved in Zen, I had told my partner at the time, if I ever get involved in an organized religion, shoot me. because to me it was like, you know, it's just, I mean, obviously it was very judgmental and small-minded of me, but, you know, to me, I looked and like groups of people getting together to do religious stuff, the source of a lot of bad stuff in the world and like of lack of free thinking and, you know, I don't know. So I was very dubious, but because the Buddha works so well and the Dharma works so well and Zazen works so well, I'm like, well, I'll give it a shot. And well, it didn't take much. Once I encountered the Sangha and I was like, I can't believe people have been doing this all this time. And I didn't know that people actually got together and reflected on their lives and reflected on themselves and took an honest inventory of themselves and explored better ways. It's like, wow, I found my people. I think Mick was...
I was going to say something along pretty similar lines, I guess. I think it was a surprise for me too, because, you know, my nature is just like, I'll figure it out by myself. Like I can do it. Like I have all that I need here. And it's just been one of those things where I think just the idea that everyone else is so honest with each other and here in this space, but also I do a lot of like, in my life, I do a lot of like, well, intellectual praising self and blaming others, right? Like I'm the smart guy in the room and everybody else doesn't get it. But it's been just like wonderful to see how like there is so much knowledge and understanding here. And to me, the Sangha treasure is everywhere. If you just listen to the people that are around you, you can learn so much. And that has been the thing that resonates with me most, because it's just been so powerful. It's just shaken all of the kind of paradigms and narratives that I've had in my life up until now. It is really remarkable to see and experience. I guess that's what I was going to say.
I would add to that. I find in my own experience that the Sangha treasure has been the one that continues to go through some kind of evolution. It continues to grow. It's becoming more and more expansive. And what I was really surprised by a year or so into my practice was how much I needed the Sangha. That came as a shock.
Yeah, I'll just kind of echo what Domio said, because I think even listening to the recordings, the things people say are so interesting and profound. That it actually excites my soul to hear these things, that people actually care about these things and are interested in pursuing them and reflecting. I mean, it gives me a lot of hope, because I can go to a pretty dark spot once in a while. And I listen to the talks, I come to these meetings, and it sort of feeds my and regenerates my soul so that I can keep, you know, doing what I'm doing every day, you know. And and kind of being in the, in this, whatever it is, cyclic existence, or kind of going through the day-to-day routine. So I'm very grateful.
Does Alice want to say something?
Sorry.
Mom doesn't want to show a poem she made, but I'm here to show it because she doesn't want to show it.
So oh.
Our beach rain probably can't read it. A single dewdrop, a wave it is not, but magnified it is an ocean. The tears of millions crash at my feet. How high it rises, then leaves, together rhythmically like life. It pushes and pulls me with such force. We are dewdrops bound together in a salty, boundless way. That's what my mom wrote.
Oh, beautiful. The poem was beautiful, and the fact that your daughter insisted on sharing it with us.
Oh, she like
also beautiful.
She keeps bugging me about it, and I go, "No, I haven't shared it." She's like, "Why?" I'm like, "I'm on Earth."
She just outed you in front of the Sangha.
Yeah, I know.
Oh boy. Well, Jim, do you have any last thoughts?
No, I think I kind of closed out mine, but thank you all for listening and providing your input.
I will say our closing verse then. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. I think that poem needs to go into our newsletter.
See, you would have been better off if you had painted it at night on the wall, then no one would know. Then no one would know who wrote it.
I'll email it out. Oh my gosh! No, it's okay. It's okay. So good night.
Good night, everybody.
Bye. Thank you, Jim.
This thank drop you so signing much. Out. Dropping out.
Bye.
Hey, how do I leave this thing?
Hey, everybody.
Good night.